Hi, everybody. It's Robbie and Garrett here. We just want to let you know that the SAG-AFTRA strike against the studios has happened. And we just wanted to assure everyone that this was recorded before the strike began. And we want to stress that we fully support SAG-AFTRA and the WGA in getting a fair contract.
Agreed.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry. As we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager, your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Voyager actor, Garrett Wong, who in 2007 played Commander Garen in Of Gods and Men, and myself, your favorite helmsman, Robert Duncan McNeil, AKA McDunk, our DM, Robbie D, that pilot guy, whatever you want to call me. Remember, everybody, you can get the full version of this entire podcast and all the extra bonus, super cool stuff if you sign up to become a patron at patreon.com/thedeltaflyers. So, Of Gods and Men.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Oh my gosh. I thought that was 2003. That's so funny. You read 2007? Is that what you have on
2007 is maybe when they released it. Maybe yeah, you shot it and it took a couple.
Maybe.
You know.
Yeah, because my memories was this. We had just wrapped Voyager and I got a call from Tim Russ and he said, hey, Bubba, I'm going to be directing this Star Trek independent feature. So wondering if you want to act in it. And I said, absolutely not. Because I was, you know, I'd done 7 years of Voyager. I said, I don't want to do an independent Star Trek feature. And he goes, but you're not playing Harry Kim. You're playing a character completely opposite. I said, oh, sign me up. So that's what got me. So the minute he said, you're playing someone completely opposite, Commander Garen. Yeah. And they made it Garen because they were trying to keep it close to my name. So it was Garrett Garen. So that was written specifically. Yes, 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 yes. Well,
it was released in 2007.
Yeah.
And the synopsis goes a little something like this.
Go.
In the year 2306, 13 years have passed since Captain James T. Kirk was swept away by the Nexus after saving the crew of the Enterprise B. The remaining crew members of the original Enterprise have gone their separate ways. Captain Nyota Uhura and Captain Pavel Chekhov, along with Captain John Harriman of the Enterprise B, come together for a special dedication in honor of Kirk's Enterprise. Their reunion is cut short, though, when they receive a distress call from a mysterious planet that presses the three friends to embark on a mission that will change their lives forever.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There you go. That sounds pretty cool. How did this come about?
Yeah, this was a project produced by Sky Conway, and the writers were, I can't remember right now, I'm blanking right now, but the script itself is really good. It's a really good script. It incorporates a lot of different Star Trek actors from different shows.
Yeah.
And yes, and Harriman, did you read Captain Harriman in there? I think that's what you read. Yeah. That was played by Alan Ruck. Alan Ruck, who played Cameron in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and also in Succession, since you've been watching Succession, he's the oldest sibling of
he's
all
had
this.
Like maybe the biggest job of his career.
Oh my gosh. What a resurgence for him, right? To be able to get that role. But he played he plays my captain, essentially. Alan Ruck does. And so I play Garen, Commander Garen. I'm the FO. I'm the first officer. And we're just sort of like the mirror universe kind of crew. Right. So we're kind of the edgy crew, basically. So
how did they get the license to do this? Because it was not produced by Paramount. It was produced independently.
Right. And they title it as Star Trek of Gods and Men is what it is. But the thing is, they didn't sell it anywhere. You see what I'm saying? So if you try to sell your project, evidently, and this is before Paramount came down hard, CBS Paramount came down hard on all these fan independent projects, mainly because they were dealing with the producer and director and writer of Axanar, who was sort of, you know, banding about, you know, the Star Trek name without any recourse. And they really got their legal involved, and an army of lawyers basically said, if you're doing a fan project, you are not allowed to, you know, you're not allowed to use anything that says Star Trek in it at all. But these guys were, this was before Axanar happened. So this, again, Star Trek, I mean, Paramount and CBS were kind of clueless. They weren't sure what to do, really. They just thought, oh, yeah. And personally, my opinion is, if it's a fan film, it's a fan film, right? I mean, it's just going to generate more interest in Star Trek. And then they will then watch other official Star Trek stuff and buy official Star Trek merch, whatever. So I feel like, do you need a crackdown on people doing independent Star Trek projects? I don't know. I mean, I'd say no, personally. Super fun project. We shot in upstate New York. Doug Knapp was our DP. So Doug came out. Yeah, Doug came out there. But this is the crazy thing, man. We were filming on, there's a soundstage up there in upstate New York that basically resembles, it is the exact replica of the original series.
It's a replica. I've heard
set.
About this place. Yes.
Unbelievable.
Ticonderoga, New York.
Ticonderoga. Yeah. So you can actually look it up, book a tour, and you can go over there, and James will let you in and take you on a tour of the set. And it's so well done. It's unbelievable. But the issue is, the building that it's housed in is an ex, it used to be an automobile body shop. You know what I'm saying? Right. It's like a garage. Right. Yeah. So not good insulation.
It's a little rough.
Yeah. It's a little rough. So they don't have insulation for sound. They don't have, good AC. Like everything was just sort of the bare minimum. And when we were filming there, oh my gosh, it was in August in upstate New York. Now, you know,
so muggy.
You know how humid New York City gets. Let's just talk about just anywhere in New York. It's mad. It's bad. It was so bad and so hot and so oppressive. And on that set without any AC whatsoever, I remember just seeing, I was watching Doug walk around. His entire shirt was wet. Just completely. God. Yeah. The entire camera crew, nobody had anything dry on because that's how much you were sweating.
Yeah.
And the craziest thing was the time that we were filming was it was actually coinciding with the Harley Davidson festival.
Oh, how funny.
And there's these train tracks also next to this structure that we were filming in. So if we weren't dealing with sound issues from trains coming past, it was Harleys coming past.
Oh no.
So it was like, we'd have a perfect take and then all of a sudden, you know, cut, and we'd have to do it again. And I'm like, oh my God. And I would look at Doug. I go, Doug, I don't know how much more of this I can take. I mean, I'm about to pass out from the heat. And every time we get a good thing going, our momentum is cut short by Harleys. And it was just, and he said, I'm sorry, Garrett. I mean, there's nothing we can do. I'm in the same boat as you. Look at me. And he does this. And I'm like, I know you're basically a walking sweat, perspiration. Everybody's just dying. And then the producer thought it would be a good idea to open the setup to fans. Two of the days that we were there. So fans were there. So in between shots, I'd go sit down in my director's chair. A fan would come up and ask me questions. So I would be doing a convention panel, basically, at the same time I'm working. Yeah. And I thought, oh my God, why?
It was really grueling.
Indie and grueling.
And it looks like in the photos I saw from Of Gods and Men that there were like classic Star Trek costumes, very hot.
Yeah, they were hot. And also the other issue that happened is the head of wardrobe quit 2 weeks beforehand and didn't have any of the costumes made. So it was all last second scrambling to put things together. Tim was directing. We already said Nichelle Nichols was there. Walter Koenig was there, Alan Ruck and another
J.G. Hertzler. J.G. was there. Yes. A lot of people. Chase Masterson.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure this is a beloved film for the fans.
It
something
is
something that's
they
really
like it. They like
you know,
it.
Yeah, yep. It feels like a love letter, something that they would love to see, whether Paramount wants to make it or not.
Yes, but it was so oppressive on set. We would walk outside, which is still humid and muggy, but less humid and muggy, just to cool off a little bit. And my funniest memory of the working on that project was there was a group of five Harleys that were coming around the bend, and J.G. Hertzler was standing right there in the parking lot, right off the road, with a tiny little personal fan, those little tiny ones, little plastic ones that Jamie would give us, or whoever makeup would give us. And he's standing there trying to cool off in full Klingon makeup. And it's like this little fan right there. And these Harleys, as they round the bend, they're like, they look over and they're like, what? Because they see the image of a guy in full Klingon makeup with a tiny fan trying to cool off right there. Yeah. And that to me was absolutely hilarious.
That's very funny.
I'm surprised we didn't cause any wrecks from people just driving off of the road on their Harley, seeing a Klingon in upstate New York. Yeah. So
very funny.
That's Star Trek of Gods and Men. There you go.
I'll have to check it out. I've never seen it, but I'll have to check it out.
One of these days, you should check it out.
Seems very cool. Yeah. Natural Law is our episode this week.
Yes.
Natural Law. We're getting really close. I can't believe we're near the end.
It goes Natural Law, Homestead, Renaissance Man, Endgame, End of Voyager.
Wow. All right. Well, let's go watch it. I can't believe we're this close. Let's go watch this, and we will be right back with our recap and discussion for all our Patreon members. Remember, stick around. We're going to have some bonus material for you coming right up.
Okay, we're back from watching Natural Law.
Yes, we are.
Okay. Let's jump right into our
poetry synopsis. Please do. Mm-hmm. Let's hear your haiku.
Here's my haiku. For Natural Law. Tom has traffic school. Beltran and Ryan paired up. Ventu protected. Now, I said traffic school because I know it's pilot school, but in LA, in Los Angeles, if you get a speeding ticket, some type of infraction that'll give you points on your record, you are then allowed to go to traffic school, where you sit there for hours just going through all the rules.
I did traffic school twice during the run of Voyager,
yes,
I think.
Yes.
And I did it online. I never went to a
place. Oh, you
did
the online one. Okay.
I did the online. So it was a lot of questions, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, when did you get out to LA again? What year did you get out there?
Like 1990, 89, 90, okay. Really. But then I went back to New York for a few years.
Yep. When I was in college, I was at UCLA in 85. So 87, 88, 89, I went to traffic school every year. And then this is the one where you had to go in person, but then they gave you comedy traffic school.
You could go to the comedy clubs.
Yes.
And I wanted to do that.
Yeah. It was a comedian that would actually teach you the laws and make you laugh. So I did that too, to pass the time. But that's why I said, Tom is traffic school.
Well, it's interesting you said traffic school, because listen to this limerick. Here we go. Voyager encounters a primitive planet tribe. To an isolated life, they fully subscribe. Paris goes to traffic school till he finally breaks every flying rule. But I'm still not loving the Seven Chakotay vibe.
Oh.
Bam, bam.
Wow. Bam.
Traffic school in both of us.
We were on the same wavelength.
Yeah, it was traffic school.
Wow. Well, your guess was that there was a sort of a romantic flirty thing here, but I didn't think there was none in this one.
No, not really. There was
kissing.
There's a little, Beltran always plays seduction, even with you, with Harry, with Tom. He always plays a little like, he's seducing everyone when he's talking. He's got, I feel like that's what I get.
Yeah.
So I did.
So Neelix plays in love with Janeway when he's dealing with Janeway, and Chakotay with anyone else, he seduces us.
He's seducing them. And I did feel like the very last scene, I felt like there's a little, well, I'm really glad to be back here.
Oh, the very last scene. Okay.
There's hints of it, but it's not as blatant as I thought it was going to be.
Oh, no. There's a definite hint, but only at the final scene, though.
Yeah.
On the planet with the Ventu, there's nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Well, let's get into it. There's
it.
A couple of places it. Where I did feel like he played the sort of seduction a little heavier, but
all right, let's just talk about writers and directors. We were correct on director Terry Wendell.
I can't believe we both nailed it. We knew that it was
he was in the mix.
We knew he
would come in one more time.
Yeah, because he did a lot of episodes last season.
Did he lose a bet in a poker game with Rick Berman? And he just said, look,
you're going to owe me 15 episodes of Voyager to direct. This is pretty much what's going to happen.
I don't know. I don't know how.
Very interesting.
It's a puzzle.
Story by Ken Biller and James Caan. K-A-H. Yes. Every time I see Caan, I think C-A-A-N as the actor, but no. Teleplay by James Caan.
I think I remember reading something that Ken had pitched this story, like in season 4 or something like that.
Oh.
When he was not the showrunner. And so I feel like this story had been around. Ken had pitched it to Jerry Taylor or The Room or somebody. And they decided not to do it early in 7's run, but then he came back around because Ken was our showrunner this last season.
Yeah. And maybe they were missing one episode, a storyline for a single episode. And he said, hey, what about my season 4 pitch? And boom, here it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Actors. What about actors?
Sure. Let's go through them. Our guest stars, we have Paul Sandman or Sandman. He played the Ventu healer, the primary adult Ventu person that Chakotay was dealing with. His very first credit was a 1991 episode of Civil Wars, is the television series. He has 6 total credits on IMDb, and 3 are Star Trek credits of his 6 total credits. Star Trek Klingon, a voiceover role. Star Trek Klingon Academy, yet another video game voiceover role. And, of course, Star Trek Voyager. Next up, we have Autumn Reeser. Autumn Reeser, who played the Ventu girl. Now, Voyager was her very, very first credit because at the time, I think she was 20. She was at UCLA. That's her alma mater. That's my alma mater. We have the same alma mater. And her very early auditioning in her career or in her credits, she has a Burger King commercial, which was my very first on-camera thing
Funny.
So I have all these similarities with Autumn Reeser. She is 1980 in birth, so she's Year of the Monkey, so she's the same sign as I am. I'm one cycle ahead of her, 1968. And then she went on to portray Taylor Townsend on The OC from 2005 to 2007, so you directed her.
I directed her, yep.
There you go.
That's what I was about to say. When I saw Autumn's name come up, I was like, oh my God, I've worked with her a bunch.
Yeah.
I worked with her on The OC. I worked with her on a show called The Arrangement.
Yeah.
That was a Bravo or E Entertainment when they were doing Scripted. I worked with Autumn a bunch.
Wow.
And I can't believe that I never put this together, that she was on our show. Didn't know it.
Very interesting. We both have some connection in a way. Like me, I saw her in the makeup trailer and I saw the other Ventu in the makeup trailer, but I had no scenes with the Ventu, right? Neither did, did you?
No, I didn't. I had none.
So I never spoke with her, but now looking at all these credits and I was like, oh my goodness, this is
She's crazy. Done really well and she's a great actress.
Yeah.
And I can't believe, you know, the premise of this primitive society, they had no lines. No one had any lines.
Nobody.
It was all hand signs.
And you know how difficult that is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Very as an difficult. Actor.
Yeah.
No lines. So good job. All right. Next up, we have Robert Curtis Brown.
And I've also worked with a bunch.
You're all over the place.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
I think I did know that Robert did Voyager because when I worked with him, again, over the years, I remember we had passed maybe on stage or something because he was always on the view screen.
Yeah.
But Robert Curtis Brown is a great theater actor. I did The Orville with Robert Curtis Brown.
Oh, good.
I don't even remember, maybe Desperate Housewives.
Yeah.
I've worked with him a handful of times. Similar
to Autumn Reeser. Worked with them a handful of times there.
Yeah.
So Robert, I keep wanting to say Robin Curtis, which we know is one of our Star Trek friends, but Robert Curtis Brown, who played the ambassador, very first credit was a 1980 episode of American Playhouse.
Yeah. He was a theater guy. It was
theater man. All the
fancy.
Way.
Yeah. That's where he came from. He's a great actor. Yeah.
Yep. Next up we have Neil C. Vipond. He's the flying instructor, Mr. Clegg.
My nemesis. Yes.
First of all, just to say, he did pass away on July 15th, 2022, at the ripe old age of 92. So he made it to the ninth decade, which is pretty amazing.
Wow.
Very first credit, 1953 episode of a Canadian series called Encounter.
Wow.
1953.
It's wow.
Just okay.
Yeah, that's a while crazy.
Back. Yeah. And we have co-stars, Ivar Brogger.
Ivar Brogger.
Yeah, Ivar or Ivar. Ivar Brogger.
It's Ivar because... It's Ivar. Yes, I am friends with Ivar.
Oh.
I met him when I directed the episode Unity and cast him in his very first television job ever. He was another theater actor. And he did the episode Unity. He was one of the ex-Borg. He was like a big role. So,
oh, my God.
This is... He's back on our show as a different...
Oh, this is his second time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, if we didn't talk about him, I'll just say he played Baris, first of all, and mm-hmm. you know him. And 1975, episode of Great Performances was the very first credit for...
I have a feeling Great Performances was a theater piece that was recorded and put on PBS.
Oh, all right.
I don't think he had ever done anything on film until he did Unity.
Oh, you're kidding.
That's what he told me, at least. But maybe he meant he had just moved to L.A. Maybe that was his first L.A. thing.
That's a big gap. That's 26 years from 1975. Great performance.
But he could have been in college in a production of some Shakespeare play that they filmed and put on PBS.
So he says Ivar, right?
Ivar.
Is it Brogger or Broger?
Broger.
Broger.
Ivar Broger. Yeah.
Great.
Is how he pronounces it.
Yeah.
Lovely, wonderful gentleman. Great actor.
Yeah.
I've stayed in touch with him over the years. He's awesome.
Lovely. Yeah. I like to hear that. Matt McKenzie, who played the Port Authority Officer, 1987 episode of Moonlighting. The show
that was a big hit.
That bartender Bruce booked.
Yes.
When we talked about
it. Exactly. We talked about it.
Yes. Yeah. Next up, we have Brooke Benko, the transporter chief in the background there when... Mm-hmm. Paris meets Mr. Clegg for the first time. She does have a single line. 2000 episode of Boston Public.
Oh.
It was Brooks. Yeah. There you go. All right. And that's it. We've got everybody.
It. Yeah. Well, before we get into this recap, I just want to say, and this is a surprise to you. I mentioned it just before we hit record.
Yes.
I have a video of behind the scenes filming this episode out in what I think is Griffith Park.
Yeah.
Location, a bunch of different scenes, some stuff, just a lot of stuff behind the scenes of this episode. I think I was filming for our wrap party blooper reel that we were going to put together, some behind the scenes interspersed with the blooper reel and put some of the crew on. So this was just me filming the crew at work for that. But we're going to show that in the bonus material after this recap.
Yeah.
So all you Patreon patrons, stick around for your bonus material. Yeah. If you're not a Patreon patron, this is the kind of stuff that we find and add in behind the scenes stuff that we find, interviews. So anyway, I'm excited to look at this with you. You haven't seen it.
Sounds amazing. Yeah. So for those of you who have been kind of just tuning in to our free podcast, on the bone, just so you know, with Patreon, I think you can see this video once you sign up for lieutenant level. I think that's $5 a month, something along those lines. And you can actually see the bonus, this actual video. So, I'm super excited. And I'm shocked that you found this.
I can't wait to play it for you right now at the end of this and hear what you say as you see all the faces and all the people there.
That's
going to
be
fun. Yeah. Okay, now let's get into the story.
Well, you know, what are they doing? They're on their way to some conference, but for some reason Chakotay kind of takes a detour just to like look at the beauty of
he's just looking out the window and kind of he wants to fly down and see this beautiful lush planet.
Right.
They're not in the Delta Flyer. They're in a different, like a class two shuttle or standard Starfleet shuttle. It's one of our older shuttles.
Yeah. Well, thank God, because
you know what
happens to that shuttle. So it's not the Delta Flyer, right?
It's Seven and Chakotay in the, in the shuttle. And, he's talking about how beautiful it is. She's not interested. And then he's got a line where he says, but you don't see natural beauty like this every day. And when he said it, I rewound it. I was like, was he doing a Bob Picardo imitation there? I tell you, Seven, there's always time for warp field dynamics. You don't see natural beauty like this every day. It was such a, like, I think Robert Beltran was probably doing a little doctor flair to that delivery. It made me laugh.
He definitely probably was. That's so funny.
Oh,
my goodness.
But they bump. Something happens. There's a big bump. They look outside. They see some kind of force field or dome right over the jungle there, and the shuttle sort of bouncing off of it. It bounces, and there's like a power surge that happens. They try to use shields, but the shields aren't working. They lose impulse engines. The warp core's offline. This shield has caused some kind of power failure in the shuttle that they're crashing. And so they decide to realign these weapons, the phasers, and maybe Seven says she can open a hole in it and they can sort of crash land. They can't even beam out because their transporters won't go through this dome, this protective dome. So they fire the phasers just as they're heading through the hole.
It looks like it closes up and chops off the back half or part of the shuttle. Is that what you're is that what you got?
Yeah, look, it starts tumbling in the air, and it looks like just a total, you know, a total loss of life and property. Like I don't know how you'd survive.
They should have been toast, basically. But well,
they beam in to the planet, and they're both standing up.
Yeah, they had the wherewithal to beam in standing up after that little rump top.
They should have hit the ground, tumbling and rolling, and
they should have beamed in mid, like you know, in some crazy, like you know, like they're being flipped around upside down. It would have been quite funny.
It didn't match the exterior visual effects. The crashing was so big and dramatic.
Oh,
and then their beam-in is just standing there.
Yeah. It's like, nothing happened. Yeah.
And I noticed they had didn't they have like a case with them or something?
What? No.
Well, they end up with a case. Where'd they get it? Do they find it along
so
the way?
So they beamed in with the case, one of them?
Did they think, let's beam in with a case so we can collect debris? I don't know.
It was just they wouldn't have had time to do that. That's not very practical and not very realistic. So
but that's how we end. They're in the jungle.
Yeah.
And I think this was on the stage. I think we built a jungle set. I know on they did 16. some exterior location work, which I think was Griffith Park in this, which is very close to Paramount.
Yeah.
10 minute drive up Gower.
How much do you think production paid to rent out parts of that park? To be honest, like what did they pay the city for that? What do you think they would have charged?
Back then, probably $10,000 a day.
$10,000?
Or something.
Okay.
Yeah. Plus more money for parking lots that they buy out. And they probably had to pay some park guards. And so it was probably, you know, double that each day just for all the other fringe.
The incidentals. Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if they were out there 2 days, I'm guessing they were probably out in Griffith Park for a couple of days and on stage for a couple of days. Because there was a ton of cave work, jungle work. It was all, you know, a mashup of real and stage work.
Man, I bet you a lot of their budget is from renting out bits of that park, just the productions throughout the year.
Yeah.
Easily. All right. Come back to credits.
Yeah, we go to credits. We come back. We're still in the jungle. Seven looks at her tricorder, or does she just look up? But she realizes the barrier's closed. The hole that they made is closed. We reveal that Chakotay has his pants are torn, and he's got this line. It actually looked like a good wound. Like the makeup department did a nice job. It looks, you know, he got hurt. He's got a cut. He's limping. And Seven scans him and realizes that he's got a hairline fracture. So he's got a broken bone. I just want to make sure it's not just a cut.
No.
He's got a broken bone.
Broken leg.
Okay. Yes. He needs fancy medical equipment to heal that bone, or it's just going to take time. Broken bones take time to heal. There's no other option. It's either Starfleet technology to heal, you know, heal that broken bone, or time. You know, 4 to 6 weeks at least. Anyway, okay, let's just say he's got a fracture. You know where I'm going with this.
I do know where you're going. Now, Seven basically detects shuttle debris all over the place. So Chakotay thinks that maybe we can kind of pull together some of these broken components and send like a distress signal, something along those lines. So the conference is not going to happen.
Yeah, he even thinks they can make the conference, he said. You know, if we hurry, he says we might even make the conference.
With his broken leg?
Yeah. But he loves where they are. Couldn't ask for a nicer place. And they start looking for debris. We cut out to this space station.
Yeah.
Which I guess is where the conference was going to be.
Right. These are the Ladojians.
The Ladojians. Yes. Yeah. We see the Delta Flyer doing some super cool moves. I made a note, like, that's the kind of Tom Paris flying that I miss. Like, I've been talking about that lately.
Which you do more of later, too.
Yes.
Which is awesome.
Thank God.
I love that scene with Clegg.
But yeah, he sort of dives under a ship and cuts in a tight space.
Yeah.
And he's arriving to this port station, and suddenly he gets a hail. An officer, I guess, comes on the screen and says, guest vessel 74656. This is port control. Shut down your engine. Basically pulling him over.
Mm-hmm.
And Paris is like, what's up? And he goes, you committed violation 256. You're in trouble. And Paris tries to charm his way out of it. You know, the officer is not moved. And he says there's going to be a penalty for this flying. And Paris wants to know what it is.
Yeah.
And he says, the officer says, we'll tell your commanding officer. And all I could think of was like, don't argue with a cop, Tom. Like, why are you, you know, just say, yes, sir. Thank you. Sorry. Take the ticket. Deal with this later. But he's like, he's trying to charm his way out. Argue.
Yeah.
And
did you think of the scene from Q2 where the Chakuzin was actually Q and saying, you'll have to pay, you'll have a fine, but I can't tell you what it is yet. It was almost like a similar sort of feeling.
Similar thing.
On. Yeah.
By the way, when Tom first comes to a stop, after that exterior shot where it's really cool.
Yeah.
They cut inside and you see Tom powering down some levers and things.
Yes.
And I was like, we never do that. I love that. It was a piloting story beat where I could use the levers and turn the engines down and, you know, settle back. It was, I was happy with the way I was animating and using the props and things.
Yeah. It looked good.
Because there was no rules and no instruction on that.
No, it was up to you. Yeah. You pretty much figured out the sequence of the shutdown, and it looked very natural. So good job.
I was happy with that. So in the ready room, Paris opens the scene with piloting lessons. And I guess he's got to take piloting lessons, traffic school. And I just thought in this scene, Janeway's telling him he's got to take traffic school or piloting school. And she's like, it'll give you time to brush up on all your skills. And
well, you kind of say, like, we're not even going to be here that long. And she's like, no, there's a conference that Seven and Chakotay were invited to. So, yeah, you got plenty of time to go through this piloting school.
I felt like in this scene, Kate Mulgrew was really enjoying Tom or me, Robbie, you know, being like completely outraged and powerless. She was. Kate's eyebrows and smirks and smiles, her facial mugging was hilarious to me. Kate, I love Kate Mulgrew's faces. She had tons of thoughts and feelings in this scene. It was very funny. Back to the jungle, I think, right?
Yeah, we're back. But let me ask you, were you upset that Kate was?
Oh no, I think
that Janeway was feeling
that
way. I love
playing like
okay.
I love okay that was her choice, and it just made me more frustrated. Like, I was totally, I can't believe you're not telling them that I'm the best pilot in the Alpha Quadrant. Like, I don't need traffic school. Oh, it was fun.
All right.
Made me laugh.
We're back in the jungle. They find a little piece of debris. It's completely just, you know, nuked, so they can't do anything with it. But then Chakotay's tricorder picks up some other life signs, and this is when we are introduced to the Ventu. They're kind of like lower down in the valley when you first see them. The shots from the distance, and they're very primitive. I mean, this is definitely a pre-warp society. No use of any technology, so to speak, right?
Yeah. And I couldn't tell where that POV, when they look down at the, you know, the village or whatever, it felt like a combination of VisiFX and a high angle on stage, because there were the caves, which we know were on set.
Yeah.
There was a lot of jungle around it, but it felt a little VisiFX.
Right.
You know, those kind of shots are hard to get because you've got to get way up on the stage to get enough room for them to fill in all that extra stuff around. But
so they brought a crane in for that.
They probably brought a crane in. Mm-hmm. I remember, I don't know if this was the shot, but I remember Marvin talking about a shot like this. This could be the one, but where they had to take the camera up into what's called the perms. So the perms are probably 75 feet up in the air. It's all those catwalks that are way up high where they rig the ropes that hold sets and walls and things up. They took that and their stairs that look terrifying to me along the stage wall. And they could, this could have been the shot where they went up into the perms and then pointed the camera over the edge of a catwalk looking down get that angle. They might have done that.
Oh my goodness.
On stage. This shot definitely felt like it was enhanced and they would have had to do something like that.
Wow.
Yeah, we see the village and then they decide that Chakotay is very interested and he wants to get a closer look. And Seven's like, no, we're not on an anthropological mission.
Yeah.
And he says, yeah, okay, you're right. Let's search for debris. He starts to move and he collapses in pain.
Yeah.
And I wrote down, great head fling, Robert. He did this like dramatic, and fell down. It was a little Shatner-esque, you know. It was fun. It was funny to me, actually.
Seven says he's developing an infection. He should rest. And so he's going to stay there and kind of keep out of sight. And she's going to go and keep foraging for more parts.
Yeah, I think the thing that felt Shatner-esque about it is he was so interested in like classic Robert, like, you know, this village, these people are so interesting. He was calm. And then suddenly it was like, it was just such a big turn. I was like, whoa, that's a Shatner move. That is, yeah.
Well, you know, when you got a broken leg, you got a broken leg. You got to up your performance. Yeah.
Yeah. So he rests against the tree trunk and Seven's going to go see if she can find anything.
Mm-hmm.
So we see Seven collecting more spare parts. She finds another part. And I thought, what is she going to do with all these spare parts? Like, I guess they're just going to see what they get and then MacGyver it together.
That's right.
yeah. But she calls to Chakotay.
Yeah.
And
then it cuts to his comm badge, like basically off camera of her line, right? So it starts on her and then it jumps to him, but he's sleeping kind of. He's sort of like, he's unconscious.
Against the tree, he's kind of dozed off. And this red hand comes in.
Yeah.
It's one of the villagers and they touch him and he jumps up. And then when he jumps up, the guy reaches out, grabs the comm badge, throws it on the ground and then smashes it.
Stomps on it. Yeah.
Stomp. No, it doesn't he hit it with a rock?
No, he does it.
He hits it with a rock. Mm-hmm. He takes the comm badge, throws it on the ground, and then there's a tight shot of this rock hitting it.
And then it breaks like it's glass.
And I thought, isn't it made of tritanium or some Starfleet metal? Haven't we gotten beyond dropping our phone and things just break? Like,
but see, clearly in this atmosphere, all of our comm badges turn into very brittle, brittle material.
I guess I'm going to go with that. Yes. It completely shatters into a million.
Like I said, it was like glass.
Yes.
Very funny.
We cut back to Seven. She can't reach him. So she puts the part in the case that they luckily brought with them when they transported out of that dramatically tumbling thing, puts in a case and walks away.
I'm getting a feeling you don't like this episode that much. All right. So there's a passage of time. It's nighttime.
Yes.
And she's trying to track Chakotay. She follows his biosignal to this cave. She sees he's lying on a blanket. All the natives around him. So she thinks he's, I don't know, something's happened to him. They're accosting him. So she's like, step away. And Chakotay's like,
I feel like I'm you in this comment because you often make this comment.
Yeah.
When I saw this, I was like, this looks a lot like Avatar aliens. Like, like their costumes, their hair, their prosthetic. I felt like it was a little in the vein of like the Avatar people.
Yeah.
And then I looked up,
the Navi.
Mm-hmm. But when I looked up, when was Avatar made? It wasn't made for like another or 8 years.
Oh yeah. Right. It's not out yet.
So obviously we didn't steal from Avatar, but I wonder.
James Cameron stole from us. Clearly.
It feels like it.
No, he was, I think Tom Paris is James Cameron's favorite character. And he saw that you were doing this kind of cool flying thing. So he really paid attention to this episode. Oh, yes. And then he saw the Ventu. And he went, Ventu. I like the V. Navi. And so Navi. He went with Navi Ventu. That's what he did.
I think he might have. But they honestly, they do look a lot like the
they
Navi.
They do.
The Navi.
Exactly
from,
right. Mm-hmm.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Anyway. Because when I look at this, they do, because the Navi to me are very African tribesmen looking, right? Like yeah. From the African continent. And same thing here with the red paint and the way that the girl's hair was very much like certain tribes that you can see, primitive tribes that at least back in the day, I suppose, on the African continent. So that's yeah. What I saw.
Yeah, maybe that's right. Where they both got inspired from yeah. Similar sources.
Definitely.
Anyway, she sees Chakotay yeah. Lying on this grass bed or something.
Yeah.
And then she says, step away from him, and shines a light to them.
Yeah.
And I thought, she doesn't have her weapon drawn. Like, how does she know that they're so primitive they don't have weapons?
Yeah.
She's gonna, you know, stun them with her light.
Yeah.
she just shined the light.
They scurried. Quickly,
but even in this case, you don't yeah. know. You would, just for defense or yeah. protection, you would right. have your phaser out. Did she not have a phaser?
I don't think she has a phaser, but she's got the utility case that can be a shield and a weapon if yeah. you know how to wield it correctly.
Yeah, maybe they don't have phasers. That actually just occurred to me. But yeah. I was just surprised she only holds the light up and
yeah. Yeah, but everything's okay. He's like, yeah, look, they bandaged my leg. They put some herbs on it or whatever.
Some herbs. And they've wrapped a banana leaf around it. So that's going to help the broken leg, the banana leaf. That's how skeptical I was. But we'll get there.
So, okay, listen, the banana leaf has medicinal properties.
I'm sure it does, but it can't heal a break. A broken bone. I don't care if it's a fracture. I don't care. I've had broken bones. There's nothing but time unless we have Starfleet technology. Banana leaves are not going to do.
Sorry.
Anyway.
All right.
The banana leaf is wrapped around his leg in a, in a splint. And yeah, she turns off the light. They talk. Chakotay explains that, you know, you couldn't reach me because your call on my comm badge scared them and they broke it. And he says, this is really good shelter. And they're helping me with this banana leaf on my leg. So... let's just rest. I'm going to rest, and I suggest you do the same. And she's left sort of sitting nearby.
Yeah.
And there's flickering, by the way, there's flickering firelight from the fires everywhere.
Right.
And I just want to say to the audience, when you watch these episodes, we didn't really have, we sometimes would have real fires, but if it was this situation where it's just on the walls, it yeah. would be light bulbs on what's called like a variac or a thing that would flicker, that would give it juice,
and then it would block it. It was on. That's the device. It would just yeah. flicker the light. That's it.
But it was
right?
it was yeah. literally light bulbs that would just
yeah.
you know strobe and flicker yeah. around to yeah. replicate a fire. But there was
it works. It works.
Looks beautiful.
Yeah, you can't tell the difference.
Beautiful.
we do see Autumn Reeser for the first time, kind of trying to touch Seven's implant at that point. And she,
at first I was like, because I've worked with Autumn, but yeah. much more recently, like the OC, yes, was maybe 5-6 years after this,
yeah.
but on the arrangement, that was just yeah. a few years ago.
Yeah.
And so when I saw Autumn in this first shot, I was like, is that her? Because there's so much makeup and
is that like, wig? Yeah.
I think it's her.
Yeah.
You know,
so funny. All right.
Yeah.
Let's move on. We're back on Voyager. We're in the corridor and we have Kim, Neelix, and Torres at this point in the walk and talk. And Kim starts off talking about how Chell says we shouldn't miss the Flame Garden. So we're talking about the Bolian on our show. So we have reference to some of the other characters we haven't seen in a while. Neelix talks about how the Arboretum is beautiful as well. Torres says we can do both. And that's when Tom comes around the corner. And I got to say,
like,
you just appeared.
I just disappeared.
And I'm like, oh, you're joining us. Oh, that's right. You have to go to pilot school. I feel like I relished this moment as much as Janeway. We love piling on you. And I felt bad, to be perfectly honest, when I watched this. I said, I'm a little too hard on Robbie right now.
No, it was funny.
So you're okay with it. Okay.
Yeah. The thing I wasn't okay with is I feel like the blocking of walking down the hallway, the three of you and then me joining you, it was like four people in a walk and talk shot. Mm. It just felt like we were walking as if we knew there was a shot, a camera. Mm. I wish we had been a little more staggered and broken up and maybe, I could have come from behind you and
caught up to us.
It just felt like the simplest, shortest walk with four people side by side so that, you know, they have their opportunity for lines and they didn't have to cover it. It just, I don't know. I wish we had been a little more natural. It felt.
What about this? What about this take? You come in, but you stumble and fall and you're now flat on your back. And now the shot is the POV of you looking up and all of us are looking down at you and like, oh, you're joining us. That would have been kind of funny. Different, you know, no one would have known.
Anything to break up.
Fine.
Yes. But Tom's going to meet his pilot lesson instructor. They all go into the transporter room.
Yeah,
and then this man Mr. Clegg, the flying instructor, is beamed aboard, and he is all business. This character is all business. And by the way,
I love his character. I thought he was awesome.
He was great. And as soon as I saw him, so many memories. I forgot about this episode and this whole story for even Tom's part of it. But as soon as I saw him. I remembered, this guy, I remember doing a bunch of scenes with him. And I remembered, so his character is all business and, you know, humorless and very sort of dry and bossy. I remember the actor was kind of like that. And I remember feeling like, is he doing this with me? Like between the scene? Maybe he was method or maybe it was just he was playing kind of himself. But I was like, even doing the scenes with him, I was a little bit like, he's all business. It was funny.
Yeah.
I vividly remember doing those scenes with him and how between the shots, it was very much like the scenes themselves. Like,
did you try to make him laugh?
Hey, I think that was a good, I tried. Yeah. He wouldn't laugh.
Nothing.
I tried to chat him up. He wouldn't chat. I was just like, wow. This is for real.
He think he was a method actor. That just sounds
he must have been.
Yeah.
He must have been.
That's so funny. Oh my God.
But he comes in and Neelix and Kim and Torres all sort of tease him about, he's very patient and never impulsive. And Harry says, he'll enjoy all the time you can give him. Take all the time you want. So this is a very funny, cute scene. And Tom asks, like, how long is this going to take? And Clegg says, usually about 4 hours, but there's no rush.
Right.
Take our time. And I loved my awkward smile as we exit the transporter room. I really liked the storyline.
Yeah.
It was, even though this episode, the Navi part of episode to me was a little flat.
Okay.
Good themes in there. But I enjoyed watching Tom squirm and be out of fish out of water.
This is a great B storyline. I loved watching all, and you give good face in your reaction.
I know
as
I give
well,
a lot of
friend.
Mugging and no, it was, and I know I'm biased here, but I'm more critical of myself. But in this episode, I was like, this was fun. This was funny, and it was.
I feel like,
yeah.
And you need that, you know, B storyline to sort of lighten it up a little bit.
Exactly.
Right?
I was so relieved every time we went back to the driving school. I was like, thank God we're back at driving school. Anyway, we go back down to the planet. Chakotay's trying to draw a map in the dirt.
Yeah.
He talks about a river Yeah. The man doesn't understand him.
So he draws what a river is, sort of pours some water in there.
Yeah. And then the guy gets it, and the guy makes a hand signal, like something underwater or something.
Yes. Yes.
And so Chakotay copies this hand gesture, and then they talk about mountain. He points to a mountain. Mm-hmm. And
it's this. You start like this and go up. That's mountain. Yeah.
Yeah. There was some really interesting creative sign language, I guess.
Nonverbal communication happening.
There was some really good stuff.
I like it. But he does find out where he is. Like, he now knows because he draws a little map.
Yeah.
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 A trade happens where the main Ventu guy sees
his pips.
Chakotay's little, his pips, his Maquis, little pet badge.
Yep.
Whatever it is, and he wants it, so he trades him basically what looks like a nut for it.
Yeah.
It's like, here, this nut for that thing,
and maybe that's the medicine that heals his broken leg.
Clearly,
that must be it, because a banana leaf ain't doing it.
No.
Okay, that's solved that whole problem for me now. Okay,
Seven sees this exchange, and she walks over and. She kind of makes fun of him a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I hope you... Did you make a favorable exchange? It was a little...
She was a little judgy.
Yeah.
But he's the one that was, you know... He's the one who... Well, he knows.
Yeah.
He's a commander. He knows the Starfleet rules. He knows that giving any technology... I don't know if there's any technology in the pips. I doubt it.
No. Yeah. It's just a pip.
So maybe that's why he feels... Like, it's almost like a rock. I guess it's the safest thing that he could do.
Yeah.
But they do make the exchange, and she says that she's found some other components. Mm-hmm. And Chakotay says, great, I've been mapping the area. Here's the river we passed. Here's where we are now. And they realize it's probably about 6 kilometers away. And Chakotay says, well, maybe one of them can take you there. And she goes, no, we need to limit our... So she's like, distance.
But she's trying to prime directive it, is what she's trying to do.
Yeah. Yes, she is.
As much
as Chakotay's not.
No.
She decides to go alone and not let them see her building a Tetrion-based signaling device that would break the prime directive. Yeah, so Seven leaves, and we do see that Autumn Reeser's character, the girl, is watching.
And kind of, do we see her follow her at this point? No, we see her watch her leave, right?
She's just watching. Yeah. She's kind of hiding behind a tree or something. We cut over to Seven in the woods. She trips over a tree root and drops her tricorder down a hole in the ground.
What kind of hole is that? It's like, what the?
No, I don't know. It was a weird hole. It was on stage, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It was just a dark
before set. Before you jump into that, let's just finish out that end scene, a very funny part where the Ventu man has built a walking stick for Chakotay. So he starts using that. He's very happy. And he hobbles over to a group of teenage Ventu that are standing there.
Yeah.
And he says hello to them. And he turn around. And they've been drawing his tattoo on each other's heads.
Yes, they're painting
because they think it's cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and that was, I laughed at that, definitely.
He's already changing their culture.
Changing
the prime
culture.
Director. Just right. The littlest, the right. smallest. Action yes. can have big ripple effect.
Yeah.
I love the hello sign, by the way, because he does a hello, and it's like a fist by the heart
and then it opens up
like a fan or something. Mm-hmm. Like a finger fan. It was cool. Yeah. I really like that one.
Yeah. Oh, back to the jungle. Yeah, she loses that tricorder.
And her hair is coming loose, which I love that her, you know, she's loosening up a bit.
Yeah.
She's sitting by the tree when suddenly she hears a noise. She calls out, identify yourself. And Autumn Reeser, the girl, comes over with a blanket and puts the blanket over her shoulders. And then she grabs some stones and squeezes some oil from some kind of nuts or fruit or something. And she makes a fire.
Okay. Because I thought she squeezed the oil out of a rock. I was like, man,
oh, I thought it was
strong.
Like a nut or a berry.
Yeah.
But Seven says, oh, an exothermic reaction. So Seven knows how that happened. Obviously, the girl just knows that if we put this on there and scrape the stones together, it will cause this fire.
Yeah. And she pulls some type of, I don't know, it looked like a tree bark, or maybe it's a root, some type of root to get to 7 to 8.
Yeah.
That's what it
was. It's a cheese puff. She gives her a cheese puff.
That's why they're orange, because they keep eating Cheetos. They keep eating Cheetos. See, and the cheese from the cheese residue gets all over their face and their body. And they just started once they got their face dirty, they just said, hey, ha ha ha. They laugh and they continue the color down their body.
Yeah. And they're eating Flamin' Hot Cheetos. Flamin' Hot Cheetos. What they're eating.
Yeah.
Flamin' Hot Cheetos, definitely. Like, if you've ever eaten Flamin' Hot Cheetos, you turn
orange.
Your fingers turn. Yeah,
pretty much.
So I think that's what it was.
I'm actually salivating for Cheetos now because of
she offers her the Flamin' Hot Cheeto, and Seven at this point says, "No, thank you, I'm not hungry."
Yeah, she's not. No.
And now we go to the shuttle bay.
Oh,
the
Delta
Flyer, and the teacher's inside there, getting a rundown of the Delta Flyer. Tom's very proud of it.
Yeah,
but then the teacher starts criticizing all the systems, inadequate system integration, visibility is impaired by lateral sensor arrays, insufficient console accessibility, and then Paris tries to go along with him. He's trying to kiss up.
Yeah, but the thing that he lands on is the polarity thrusters. He says that they've been known to cause accidental acceleration, and then Paris kind of like, you know, he's like, oh, yeah, exactly. And why should I be held responsible for the design?
It's not my fault. It's the ship's flaws.
Yeah, it's the ship's flaws, the design. And then Clegg's like, well, according to my records, you were the designer. So he's done his homework. There's
it
no
backfires.
Way. Yeah,
it
you backfires. Can't get. Oh, you can't escape from this guy. He's too good.
Yeah.
I just imagine that this guy has been this pilot instructor for the last 46 years.
He's heard every excuse.
Like, he's heard it all. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a by the book guy.
Oh, he doesn't go with any, my dog ate my homework excuse. No.
We're back in the jungle. Yeah. She's wearing the blanket that Autumn Reeser, the girl, gave her.
Yeah.
I call it the M&M blanket because it's this blanket with like M&Ms, you know, attached to it. These little red and yellow and green.
You called it the M&M blanket. My notes say the Skittles blanket. So I've got Skittles and you got M&Ms. Yes. Or the candy blanket. Let's just say that for all of our listeners that may not have M&Ms or Skittles in their country, the candy blanket.
Yeah, it looks like little candies attached to the blanket. It was adorable.
Yeah.
The girl offers her food again. They wake up, they look around at the, you know, the trees, nature. Seven's starting to soften a bit. And the girl offers her food again this time, but she takes it, which you feel like Seven's starting to loosen up. Her hair's falling down even more. And then Seven draws a map and says, hey, I'm trying to get here.
Yeah.
Can you show me? And the girl says, yes. She points and they start walking.
But they take a detour.
They take a detour.
Yeah.
And Seven's like, wait, I thought it was the other way. And then the girl takes her to this triple waterfall.
Yeah.
Beautiful VisFX there. And Seven starts to, you know, interrupt and say, look, we really have to go. And the girl sits down. And it's great because Seven does need to slow down. She does need to appreciate things.
Yes.
And so she's starting just to sit with this girl and look at the beautiful waterfall and the birds and the trees. And it's like Avatar is what it's like. It's beautiful.
Yep.
We're back in the clearing where Chakotay is.
He's really stressed out right now. He's just like, you know, he hasn't seen Seven. He's a little stressed out. The guy doesn't know what he's talking about. So he drops down and he draws in the dirt of what Seven looks like. And at first I thought, oh my gosh, he did not just do that, did he? Because I thought he drew two round circles to be, you know,
boobs.
Yes, that's what I thought. Okay, and I was like, no, he didn't do that. But in reality, he drew a big circle as the face, two smaller circles with a line down the middle. That's the nose. Then he did the side dolphin looking implant
the
over
implant.
Her eye. That's what it was. So I had to rewind it. But initially I thought you didn't just draw breasts, did you? But no, he didn't. It was two eyes, nose, and the implant.
Yes.
And that's clearly
Yeah, he drew a very primitive version of Seven's face to show the technology. He's looking for technology like what Seven has.
Right. He grabs one of the native girls.
One of the
and
girls.
Brings her over. Yeah. And she has a piece of technology, debris, tied to her eye to look like Seven.
To look like Seven. Yeah. And Chakotay's like, where'd you get this? And then they show him, they bring him a bag filled with stuff they've collected.
Yeah.
And he asks where.
Yeah.
And we go back to Seven, who's found a piece of the, like the nose cone of the shuttle.
Yeah.
Stuck on the ground, a part of it. And the
girl Autumn tries to touch it. Seven's like, no.
Don't touch it. Don't touch it. And Seven starts to work. And then we go back to our ship. We're in Astrometrics. Janeway is talking with Tuvok. Tuvok says, you know, Chakotay failed to report and we can't get a response from them.
Mm-hmm. They didn't show up at the conference, right? That's what Harry says. Janeway basically says anything on sensors. And Kim goes, yeah, we've located a hull signature over the southern continent. A hull signature over the southern subcontinent, but it's only a wing. That's it.
Yeah.
And what's crazy is that Janeway's like, wait. That is really low for something to be in orbit. And Tuvok's like, no, it's not in orbit. It's sitting on an energy barrier. So that piece of the wing is right on top of the force field, which I thought was kind of funny. So anyway, the mystery continues. They're not sure what's going on. Our scans cannot go beneath the
shield. Tuvok says standard scans didn't reveal its presence, but we were only able to detect it using our Borg sensors. And I just thought, wait, we have Borg sensors?
Yeah.
Why don't we always use Borg sensors? Like,
should.
Why? Like when we have lines where we're like, sorry, nothing on sensors, Captain, shouldn't we just go try the Borg sensors? Got it. Like, why don't we do that? Or why don't we just start with the Borg sensors? Or why don't we say nothing on the Borg sensors? We can try Starfleet, the Starfleet band.
Because as Starfleet personnel, we were trained one way. And one way, we know one way and one way only.
I guess so, but like we have Borg sensors?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. So, and they're better? Just use those. Anyway, Janeway says, you know,
hail the ambassador.
Yeah. But Tuvok does say, you know, the barrier is deflecting all of our scans because Janeway wants to see if the shuttle went through that barrier.
Right. You can't read it. Top.
And Tuvok's like, you know, the barrier's deflecting our scans. And I was like, use the Borg scanner. Use the Borg. You just said they're so much better.
That's funny. Janeway does say to hail the Ladojian ambassador. So now the next scene, we're on the bridge with the ambassador on the view screen. And, you know, he kind of explains what basically happened and that he's sorry that he didn't warn them beforehand not to go anywhere near that area. Mm-hmm. But it's his thinking that our people are done. He doesn't think that they survived. But we get a little bit of backstory on what's going on here. The Ventu are basically kind of primitive ancestors to them in a way. And at least their ancestors used to be at war, I think, with the Ventu at some point. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. They talk about that here?
They do later? A little bit. And the aliens erect this hundreds of years ago. These aliens erected this dome to protect them and they haven't been back. So it's just a mystery. They cannot find a way through it. They talked about protecting the Ventu because their ancestors.
Yeah, the Ladojians fought them and polluted their habitat. That's what it was. And so therefore that other intelligent species stepped in, covered them, the Ventu, with a dome and says, you're not going to mess with these peeps anymore. That's what happened. Yeah.
I did like at the end when the ambassador sort of leans in onto the desk and he's like, the generator is inside. There's no way to access it. He's sort of leaning in.
Yeah.
And I just thought, we never have our characters on the view screen. They always just sort of sit there.
Stay in one place. Yeah.
They might move their head a little bit. Yeah. I love that Robert Curtis Brown. He did a little blocking. It was nice.
I love that.
Yeah.
Made something out of nothing is what he did.
Yeah, he did. We're out in space. The captain says, although the Ladojians are skeptical, they're allowing us to try to locate our people. Meanwhile, we've begun to analyze this shuttle fragment. Mm. And then we go into engineering. We've got a giant piece of the shuttle.
That's the wing, that part of the wing that was sitting on top, right?
It's in engineering. And I was like, why isn't this in a cargo bay?
Because Torres has to do the examination. So she beamed it.
Yeah, but couldn't she do, she can do all that in engineering. It just seems like you're going to put it right in the middle of the warp core room. Like this thing, it's people working on, they got a lot of other things happening in this room. Wouldn't you want to do this somewhere that's like sealed? And I don't know. It just seemed like an odd place. And this giant thing sitting in the middle right next to the warp core.
I know you like the B storyline, but you are so critical right now. It's making me laugh so much right now. Why is it in engineering? It should not even be there. It should be in the cargo bay, damn it.
Torres does discover that the feedback from this dome, this barrier, is what destroyed the shuttle. And she says, if we're not careful, the same thing could happen to us.
Right.
Like if we try to penetrate it like Seven and Chakotay did with phasers or something, it could destroy our entire ship. So this is a very dangerous rescue mission.
It is. Tuvok does talk about how they found similar technology in Seven's Borg database. So it's the Borg evidently did assimilate the species, or we think that they assimilated the species that erected the dome, the energy dome.
Yeah, yeah. We go back to Seven and this debris field. Autumn Reeser is making some bracelets from magnetic pieces of rock. So we see these rocks that are kind of like magnets jumping together.
Yeah.
Which is going to be a problem later. but
Chakotay shows up, right?
Chakotay shows up. And Seven has a ponytail, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. She doesn't have
it. It was great. I loved it. I wish she had a ponytail more often on the ship. Mm-hmm. But what did she tie it with? I guess it shows later.
Girl. It's a little piece of, the girl gave her a little piece of thread or their fabric, and she used that to tie it. You see it hanging off of her in the later scene. So
okay, great.
Orange, your favorite color. Like, it's orange, your favorite color. There you go. It. Your hat has orange on it too, right?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Moab, Utah. Love it. Looks great. Okay.
So we're in the debris field. Chakotay shows up with the man. Seven asks for his tricorder, but Chakotay's like, nice to see you too. I like that, actually.
Yeah.
She tells him that hers fell down that weird hole, and she's going to maybe try to transmit a signal by neutralizing the force field with a dampening field from the deflector of this crash shuttle. So she's got a plan.
She does, but it can't happen there. I think they have to be on higher ground for this thing to work. So that's why they talk about moving it. And, you know, Chakotay's like, look, that thing weighs a ton. So what are we going to do? And Seven's like, oh, we can maybe enlist their help. And that's what they do.
That's what they do. Chakotay's a little worried about enlisting their help. Yeah. For the first time, he's like, I don't know if we should involve them. So he's flip-flopped back to the Prime Directive team, but...
Yeah.
But he does eventually say that once they do all this, they can disrupt this.
Deactivate the barrier.
Chakotay is worried they may deactivate it permanently, which would be a huge change. So Seven says, no, it should go back and reinitialize after we
do
this
get out.
Procedure. Mm-hmm. Get out of here. Back to
the
traffic
flyer.
School. Yes. Basically, this is a scene out in space where the flyer is going through a cones course, like at the DMV when you get your driving test and you have to drive through the cones. And
right. But it's going through very slowly, like molasses.
Oh,
basically.
Yeah. Yes.
Clegg.
Yeah. So Clegg does say to Paris after Tom flies through some of these cones, he says, so you can execute a turn at less than 300 kph. Well done. That's really slow, 300 kph. That's really
for the flyer. Yeah,
for the flyer. That's like Tom's in pain.
Oh my gosh! But you're so impatient. You want to take the test and get
he's
out of
impatient,
there.
But
you
he's
know that you're
trying to be
missing.
Charming, trying to be, you know, really polite about it. But he's trying to get out of here, and he even says, "My friends are missing. I want to help find them." And and the driving instructor says, well, that's very nice, but I can't treat you any differently than the other people that take this course. And then he ends it with, besides, you're getting very close to becoming an adequate pilot. Rude, rude, rude.
What a burn.
Oh, I love it. It's hilarious.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we go to this rocky rise where the Ventu are helping drag this nose cone of their shuttle up to the very top. And then Seven says, you know, stand back. This is where I was like, is this Griffith Park? And then I made that note. I was like, this is not on stage. This is definitely out. It looks like Griffith Park.
Yeah.
When I found that footage that we're going to show in the bonus material.
Oh, good. Yeah.
There is some of that footage of this scene of them dragging the thing up. So
fabulous.
So it was
you get
Griffith
to see that.
Park. You get to see behind the scenes. It was Griffith Park.
Okay.
And anyway, they drag it up, and Seven says, you know, not so
back
close,
up.
Back up to the bridge. Voyager is trying to phaser the barrier,
yeah,
but they're getting this feedback.
Phasers are overloading.
Yeah, phasers are overloading, says Harry. And so Janeway says, ceasefire. She asks for suggestions, and Tuvok says, well, we could reconfigure a photon torpedo to detonate at the appropriate frequency. I yelled, no more torpedoes.
This is another reason why you're
almost home
this episode.
And
yet another photon torpedo. Yes. Yeah. No.
But that could get around this whole feedback problem. So in theory, it might work. Janeway says, do it. We go back to the rise. The natives are trying to watch. Mm-hmm. Seven says they're too close. They need to go back. Chakotay moves them back. But the girl, Autumn Reeser, kind of sneaks around to
get
closer.
She doesn't get zapped yet.
Not so, yet, yeah. But she sneaks around.
She's sneaking around.
Away
looking.
From the group, so they don't notice.
Yep.
She's away from the group, sneaks around to get a little closer.
Kim says, back on the bridge, Kim says, you know, the energy barrier is coming down. Janeway's like, wait, I thought you were still reconfiguring the torpedo to Tuvok. He's like, I am. It's just being deactivated from the inside. So Janeway asks Harry to scan for life signs. Kim says, aye, Captain. And all the audience breathes a sigh of relief. We do not have to waste that photon torpedo because
that we
God
don't
knows,
have.
We don't even have that photon torpedo.
We ran out a long time ago.
That's right.
We go back up to the rise. Seven's doing her thing. We see this energy. It seems to be working when suddenly she goes to touch... Autumn Reeser goes to touch the shuttle, and her magnetic bracelet
starts charging up.
Starts charging, and Seven says, "Take it off," but it's too late. She gets zapped by this energy. The magnets in these rocks she was playing with mess it all up.
Curiosity killed the Autumn, or almost killed the Autumn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Back on the bridge, Harry says he only reads one comm badge at Seven's.
I like my delivery of that line. It was very, it was very, I put some layers in there where it was sort of like, oh, Chakotay's dead, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what you know where I'm going with that? Like that's kind of, I add a little juice.
It should feel, the jeopardy should feel real here.
Yes.
It's still not looking good.
Mm-hmm.
But they do make contact. Seven talks to Janeway. Janeway wants to lock onto Chakotay, and Seven says, or lock them to them both, but Seven says, just take Chakotay. I need more time.
Yeah. And send a med kit.
Send a med kit to me. And Seven says, I can treat it. I just need a med kit. And so we go to a flyby and captain's log supplemental. Seven has remained on the surface to tend to the Ventu girl while Chakotay is being treated in sickbay. Now we're in sickbay and the doctor says, wow, well, the banana leaf healed the fracture and the infection. I'm impressed. I was like, he's been down there for 48 hours. How does a banana leaf heal a broken bone? It's not science.
Robbie, what's the time frame on Earth to heal a broken leg or a bone typically? Isn't it like 8 weeks to 12 weeks, something like that?
Four to 6 weeks before you get any kind of, and it could be 8 or 12 weeks. And by the way, how does the doctor even know he had a broken bone? He just knows Chakotay was injured. If it's healed, would
he would know that it was healed? Oh,
I don't know. Like, I don't know.
I'm gonna
I
say, just that's felt a like powerful this banana leaf.
That is, So everybody out there, grab a banana leaf and wrap it all around your body. You will be cured of everything. It seems like. Well, if you get a banana leaf from from these guys.
But we don't know. We don't know what the herbs were that they also put on there. There's some really good juju going on there.
That's really good.
Yeah. Yes.
It's Avatar. I'm telling you. it's miracle stuff.
Yeah.
Chakotay's very worried that they've traumatized them. And he wants to transport all the shuttle debris back so that, you know, they don't have any record of their existence with these people.
Correct.
And we go back down with Seven in the cave. The girl wakes up. She touches Seven's hand. They have a nice moment. And then they have some hand signals.
They sure do.
Seven says, it's time for me to leave. She makes a hand signal. And the girl replies, where? And it's the first time that Seven used hand signals. So I love that being the thing that, you know, she just slowly was getting more and more relaxed and more... more in touch, in tune, and connected to these people.
Yeah.
And the girl gives her a blanket, or offers her a blanket
as a gift.
Yes,
as a parting gift. But we also hear Boris's voice, the actor who you
directed. Ivar Brogger.
Yes, and and you hear him say, these botanical specimens indicate a high level of serum nitrates. And Seven walks out. Is like, what are you? Who are you? Why are you here? And he's like, oh, you must be from Voyager. She's like, who are you? He says he's Boris. He's the expedition leader. And they're there to conduct scans, evaluate the potential of this habitat in terms of resources and this and that. They have anthropological stuff they can use for research
medicine
going on.
And infrastructure.
They're jazzed.
And he said, you really did the Ventu a favor.
Yeah. Yeah, by lowering that force field. And Seven's oh, what have I done?
It's going to be like Avatar. All those giant machines are going to come in and ruin the forest.
This is the beginnings of Avatar. It really is. Yeah. I know.
Did you ever see the movie Fern Gully? Fern Gully was a cartoon, a feature animated film back in the 90s, I think. Fern Gully. It's about the rainforest in South America. It's a wonderful... Okay. Environmental, it's very much like this.
It's
Fern
Gully. Anime? What did you
say? It's an animated, I think DreamWorks produced it back when they were making a lot of animated stuff.
Oh, and, I want to watch it now.
Yeah, Fern Gully is a great animated film. Yeah, about the environment and about the rainforest.
We need more environment stuff.
Avatar, that's long before Avatar.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Anyway, we go to the ready room and Chakotay is wound up. He's like, we got to put that barrier back up. And Seven's kind of torn here. She's like, well, maybe, you know, exposure to technology and things will be good for them. And Chakotay's like, how do you know what's best for them? And she realizes, I can't. You're right.
Yeah.
And Seven really kind of makes the case with Chakotay. She's like, when I first met them, I thought they were very primitive and of little interest, but I came to realize that they're resourceful and very self-reliant people, and their isolation might limit their potential, but it will also, you know, if the isolation ends, their whole way of life is going to be ruined.
Right.
So she makes a case to the captain, and we cut on the bridge, and there's the ambassador again, thanking us for opening up the barrier, letting them now explore. And she's like, nope. You're going to have to get out of there. We're going to, you know, restore this thing. And you better get your people out of there because you don't want them to be trapped inside like ours were.
Yeah.
And he says, this is really important.
Yeah.
You know, this is our living history. We need to research this. But she said, Janeway's like, nope.
Yeah. Nope. Well, he does make one final plea. He does say, in the spirit of cooperation, I hope you'll reconsider. Which kind of sounds like something Janeway would say.
It's a bit of a threat, too. It's a
a little bit.
And then he says at the end, "Okay, I'll make the arrangements," but he doesn't seem convincing.
No.
And a little time later, we're on the bridge, and Harry says, "We've transported all of that debris. Back onto the ship. There's nothing of ours left down there. Seven's ready to go with a deflector array. When bam, there's a hit."
Yeah,
Ladozian vessel is charging weapons on an intercept course. Our transporters are offline. They hail us and they say, we're not going to let you restore that barrier.
Yeah, it's the ambassador again, right?
Yeah. And he says, you know, we only targeted your transporters, captain. We didn't want to hurt your people.
Yeah,
I hope you'll show the same restraint.
Yeah.
I love her response when she says, I don't find weapons fire of any kind restraint. I love that. She's calling him on his trying to get out of what he did, not take responsibility for firing on them.
I know. But he basically says, look, if you want to avoid any further conflict, I suggest you hightail it. Get out of here.
So it looks like they've got the upper hand. Janeway thinks for a second. She's like, where's Tom? Get me Tom.
Yeah. Well, she said take us out of orbit, so it looks like we're leaving. Sort of give us some time, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Then she wants to talk to Tommy Boy, who's still in the midst of his lesson.
Yes. And Tom gets a call, Janeway to Paris, respond. And the driving instructor is not happy. He's like, please do not interrupt my student during his examination. Janeway says, no, this is important. I'm sending you some encrypted orders. And then... Tom reads them real quick, and does a 90 degree turn. Some real cool flying starts here.
That was a nice maneuver when you just, it was like a rotation, a roll, and it
That
looked
was
so
some
beautiful.
sweet, sweet flying.
Sweet flying.
Yeah. And driving instructor's not happy. He's highly irregular, he says. Going much too fast, but Paris very politely says, I wish I could, listen to you, sir, but I really do. But I got to take care of this. And now Paris is under attack. The Laodicean ship is firing at him. And Janeway says on the bridge, give him some help. We cut back and forth basically between the flyer and the bridge.
And the bridge does kind of, Tuvok sort of gives you a little time. He gets that ship off of your tail.
Paris beams in the whole Laodicean expedition party into the back of the Delta Flyer. And Ivar Broger is back there. Cannot believe what is happening.
He tries to come up at he
Tries to
tries
come.
he tries to bum rush you, but then there's a force field that you've put up, so.
Yes. And it was so fun to see Ivar Broger in a scene again after we had worked together when I was directing. Now we're just acting together. It was great. Paris finds the deflector, gets a lock on it, but his transporters are offline. So Janeway says, you've got to get out of there then if your transporters are offline. Get out of here. And
Paris is
Paris,
like, mm-mm.
no, I got an idea. Not yet. I
Yep.
love that. Yay,
Now you've
ideas.
been talking about this. He's
I
like,
have.
why doesn't Paris come up with an idea? He's got
Yes.
all the wisdom of being such a great pilot. So now we have this moment.
Yeah. And he basically does what Chakotay and Seven did in the opening scene, fire some phasers through, from the deflector into the barrier to open it up for a second. But because it's Tom this time, I'm gonna interpret, he's able to get through that hole just before it closes in a
Okay, so
way.
no, well, this is how I think you saw it differently than I did. So you're saying you fired and you got a hole and went in. No, I say that there is no shield up yet. You fire at the thing that stopped the shield from being up, it explodes, and then the shield starts to
Starts to
close, and
close
then
and
you
he
get out.
goes,
Yes.
yes, but
Does
he
that sound
gets
right?
out. That sounds right. He gets out just in the nick of time. He's
Last
able
second.
because he's the best pilot in the Alpha Quadrant.
Yes. And right before you do that, you have been failed by Clegg, by the way.
Yes,
He
that's
does fail.
true, which is fine. I think I said something like, something tells me that's not going to be a
Gonna be a
problem.
problem. Yeah, because you can't pilot in Laodicean space. We're not staying here
Yeah,
after this
we're
anyway.
not.
So see ya.
We go to Cargo Bay, and Chakotay and Seven have their last scene together. And we talked about it before. Like, there wasn't a lot of flirting with the two of them in this episode, but there were moments, and this is definitely one where, they're sort of decompressing together about this experience, and
It's a bonding moment, definitely.
it's definitely a bonding
But
moment.
you felt there was a
A
hint
little
of
bit of a
flirtation when he says,
seduction.
I don't know about you, but I'm glad to be back on Voyager. And she's like, as am I. So that
Yeah,
moment
I felt
there.
like that moment for sure. I also think that it's not just Beltran. I feel like Jerry Ryan must have known where they were headed, that maybe that was going to happen.
Maybe.
And she was behaving much softer with Chakotay in this story,
Okay.
and
Okay.
particularly this scene.
Okay.
Normally, she's all business with, it doesn't matter if it's Janeway or
Yeah. Yeah.
whoever. She's all business, but she was very, much more vulnerable and softer in this scene. So I felt like they
Okay.
were both teeing it up just a little bit, just a little bit.
Well, I could see her being softer because she did use Chakotay in the Holo Chakotay as, her social lesson. So I feel maybe that's influencing her. But as far as Chakotay being seductive in his lines, I honestly, my
Didn't
read
really
was
see
that
it.
he was still business, even at the very end. And I didn't detect the hint as much as you did. So, yeah. Well, that's our episode. So
That
what's your
is,
lesson? Did you get any type of
yes,
lesson?
I did. I got a lesson that the lesson I have is every action has a ripple effect, so be careful. Every action that we take is going to have a ripple effect, so be intentional, be aware, be conscious of what you're doing, because you could have ripple effects that you don't even anticipate.
I'm gonna say my lesson comes from Autumn Reeser's character. and a little bit from Chakotay, but sometimes you got to stop and smell the roses. You got to literally just stop rushing through life and go out and enjoy nature. Go on a hike. Go to the ocean. Get in the ocean. I mean, nature is a very restorative and healing place for all human beings to frolic in. So I'm going to say, just slow down and
slow down. Get in the ocean, except if you live near me in Utah, where there is no ocean. So,
well, that's why I said hike. So you can in Utah. Okay. So hike in the Utah mountains and swim in the oceans if you're near an ocean. There you go.
Okay. Yeah. Deal.
Okay.
Okay. Ratings. I, as I said, did not love this episode.
Cannot wait to hear this rating.
I did not. I didn't find, I think because the guest actors couldn't speak really, like all, and I think it was the right choice, but it needed something to keep it, you know, engaging and keep the emotional stakes really high and engaged. Yeah. And I didn't feel like often it did. It felt very slow and pondery and because there was no dialogue between them.
Yeah.
So I didn't love it, to be honest. I like the themes and the ideas. I just didn't think it wasn't really dynamically shot, in my opinion. It wasn't.
Okay.
I felt like, you get my point.
Yeah.
Because I would have gone lower, but I do think that the traffic school story was funny. And the fact that that Tom got to be Tom Paris and have an idea and show off some flying that I don't think we've ever seen in 7 years. We've never seen much of that.
I agree.
Whereas, you know, some of the new Star Treks and things, you'll see some cool flying.
Yeah.
And we just didn't do it. Maybe it was too expensive. Maybe it was probably just too expensive. So we didn't do it. So I feel really happy for that storyline. I think
so that raises your rating a little bit.
It does raise it. It still does not raise it very high. I'm going to give this a 6.
Oh, that's actually more generous than I thought you would be. Okay.
I would have given it a 4. I think the traffic school story to me bumped it up quite a bit because it had a beginning, middle, and end. It involved all the characters. You guys got to tease me. I had a nice scene with Janeway. I got to, you know, Tom got to be a part of the A story, which you didn't see coming. So I think that storyline really raised it a lot. Otherwise, it would have been probably a 4.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah,
I don't have as many issues with this as you do, clearly.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. So, and because of the B storyline with Tom Paris and because of my UCLA and Burger King commercial alumni Autumn Reeser, I'm going to give this one a 7.2. So I'll go higher than you for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's see what the Captain and Admiral's average rating for Natural Law is. 6.5. So right between you and me.
Between us, yeah.
6
right and 7.2, right in the middle. There you go.
Nice. Okay. Well, there you go. I just want to remind Patreon patrons, stick around for this behind the scenes home video that I shot. And I do want to say, as I'm digging through, as we're getting near the end, I'm getting nostalgic. I found a Natural Law script. You can see it right there.
Nice.
I found a Natural Law script.
Nice.
Here it is. We're going to put that on the store. It's even got some appointment that I had written on the back. There's an address if you want to go there and see where I went in 2001. I have no idea. But that was my personal script.
It's probably some business errand thing that you had to go do.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right.
But there you go. Garrett, what is next week's episode?
Homestead.
Oh. We may have a special guest for that.
We may have.
We might have the Neelix.
We might have the Neelix. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to our recap and discussion of natural law. And join us next week when Robbie and I will be tackling the episode where we see the tearful exit of Neelix.
Yes, we do know that about it.
Yeah.
We do know that. That was a...
Yeah.
That episode... Yeah, I don't remember all the details about it, but the episode where Ethan Phillips left us early was emotional. So, yeah.
Big time. Okay. So, Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material and super bonus material because we have Robbie's home movies
from
the behind the scenes of this episode, Natural Law, that we will get to see. I'm very excited to see this for the first time. All right. See you next
week. Thanks, everybody. See you next week.